Now, you've been campaigning across the country, warning against a victory by the new Conservative Party. And this is fairly interesting, given your strong background with the party. Let's just refresh and go over this fairly quickly. You ran for the leadership in 1998, coming in second to Joe Clark. And in 2003, you ran again and came into the leadership convention with the second largest number of delegates. Tell us what happened next.
Yes, well, that was in the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada. And that's, of course, a party that is no more. But what happened in that convention, at the end of the day, Peter McKay, who was leading, asked me for my support. And we negotiated an agreement that if I would support him to win the leadership, then he would do the following things. We had a four-point agreement. And the number one, the first point was no merger or joint candidates with the Canadian Alliance. The second point was do a review of the free trade agreement and NAFTA. Third was to clean up the headquarters of the PC party. And the fourth was to put environmentally sustainable policies front and center, including more use of rail and more support for sustainable agriculture. So that was the agreement that we signed. And then we went down on the convention floor and made it public, expelled it out to the country what it stated, and I asked my delegates to vote for Peter McKay, and they did so and made McKay the leader of the party. And then shortly after, as we all know, Mr. McKay betrayed that agreement completely. He went to Mr. Harper, and Mr. Harper and he negotiated a merger of the Progressive Conservative Party into the Canadian Alliance. And it was done so in a massively fraudulent way because they left the membership rolls open in the Progressive Conservative Party so that Alliance members who voted in their own party for the merger then could come into the PC party and vote again in our party for the merger a second time. So they came in by the tens of thousands and they swamped the existing PC party membership, which had always voted against merger. And then they trumpeted this result of 90% in favor. And so then these two men are now campaigning across the country, Mr. Harper and Mr. McKay, talking about honesty and ethics in politics, and this is what they've done. And to add insult to injury, I can add that this new party then seized $70,000 of donations that had been made to my leadership campaign for the Progressive Conservative Party, and they now are those monies are now in the coffers of this new Conservative Party. The way it worked is if you gave me a donation for $100, for example, I had to send that to the headquarters of the PC party. They would cash the check and issue you a tax credit, and then they had to return the money to the candidate within 48 hours. Well, that was 2.5 years ago, and they still have my money today. So the idea of Mr. Harper and Mr. McKay talking about ethics and clean government is really an example of it boggles your mind, to put it mildly.
You attempted to use the courts to fight this merger. Can you tell us the status on the case that you initiated there?
I did. Well, the first, I joined with a number of other progressive conservatives to try to block the takeover of the party by the Canadian Alliance. And that case, we didn't win that case, and it went to the Court of Appeal. And ruled that that political parties really, they didn't quite put it this way, but almost that if a political party wants to do what it wants to do, it can, seems as if it can do it. And so we didn't win, although the judges certainly pointed out that we had a good case and they didn't assess any costs against us. So that's what happened in terms of trying to actually hang on to the name of the Progressive Conservative Party. But then in terms of my money, the $70,000, yes, I asked the party for it over and over again, and they wouldn't give it back. And so we started a lawsuit to get the money back. And first they said, we don't owe you anything because the party doesn't exist anymore. And then finally, then they offered $9,000, I think, and then $15,000. And then finally, they offered the full amount of the $72,000, and I agreed. I accepted it. And they still didn't pay it. And then when it came to time to pay it, they said, oh, but by the way, we want you to sign a paper saying, promising you'll never sue Peter McKay or Stephen Harper for anything they've done in creating the new party. And if you'll sign that, then we'll give you your money back. So I said, this is blackmail. They're attempting to use my own money, to force me to give up my constitutional rights. And so that's where the case stands, and I think we'll be back in front of the courts at the end of this month here in Toronto. So on one more count, the idea of Mr. Harper and Mr. McCabe parading across the country as paragons of virtue and pointing the finger at other political parties is really sheer hypocrisy.
How successful have you been in getting the word out about your experience with this cast of characters? And do you find that people are able to listen long enough to the story to have it affect their voting intentions?
Well, people certainly do listen whenever they get a chance. But I must say that we've seen a bandwagon effect in the major media in this country swinging towards Mr. Harper. It's almost as if the man hasn't got a past. It's not just, the ethical question is one question, but, you know, what are some of the other questions in terms of, we might be facing a referendum in the province of Quebec in the next mandate of the federal parliament, and who's going to speak for Canada up against the separatist forces there? If Mr. Harper is the Prime Minister of Canada, does anyone believe that he'll be able to inspire and motivate the Quebecers to stay in Canada? This is a man who has written against bilingualism out in Western Canada. He published his article, Bilingualism, the God That Failed, attacking the institution of bilingualism. He made a statement that whether Canada has 1, 2, or 10 national governments is frankly secondary to me. These positions are going to come back to haunt him and would really make render his ability to hold Canada together as a prime minister against the separatist forces really untenable. So that's a very dangerous situation. And then the question of our relationship with the United States. You know, historically in the past, Canada has really faced two major threats. One, that constant reoccurring danger of assimilation into our big neighbor to the south, and the other, the threat of internal breakup. And I think with Mr. Harper, we're going to be facing both of those threats at the same time. And Mr. Harper's positions would take us much tighter into the United States control. He would like to negotiate our entry into this U.S. so-called missile defense project, which will put our forces much more under U.S. command. He would like to take us out of the International Agreement of Kyoto and put us into a North American agreement, which would, of course, be a U.S.-dominated agreement. And he and Stockwell Day and Peter McKay were all vehemently in favor of the war in Iraq. I was there. I remember debating Peter McKay on this issue in the leadership race for the PC party, and he was sneering at Prime Minister Chrétien for being a coward for not sending our troops there. And Stockwell Day and Stephen Harper wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal on March 28, 2003, saying that they support the American and British position in attacking the Canadian government. So had they been in power, we would have been involved in that illegal and immoral war in Iraq, and Canadian men and women today would be coming home in body bags. So these are all statements and positions that Mr. Harper and Mr. McKay have held that have really not been examined by the press very much in this campaign at all, and I find when people hear about them, they want to know more, and yes, it does change their vote.
Yes, because of course a majority of Canadians have opposed Canadian involvement in the illegal U.S. invasion of Iraq from the beginning and to this day. Are you suggesting that they are just not aware now of Stephen Harper's position on the matter?
I think so, and I think Harper's very successfully been able to just slough that off. He said, no, we wouldn't send troops to Iraq. No, of course not. Now you wouldn't send troops to Iraq, but the point of the matter is when the rubber hit the road in 2003, he would have sent troops to Iraq, and he said so in writing, and all the people around him said they would have done it. So that's what counts. So the press hasn't really come back to him and said, yes, but this is what you said then. You would have had us in Iraq. And he really hasn't had to answer that question. Yes, now the vast majority of Canadians, French and English speaking, are grateful, I'd suggest, to Mr. Chrétien for keeping us out of that conflict. But when he made the decision at the time, it wasn't an easy one to do, and he was attacked right, left, and center by Mr. Harper and the people around him. So that whole idea of following much more closely into the United States is something that Mr. Harper, that's his track record, and of course there was this article not long ago in the Washington paper saying that if Mr. Harper wins, he will be the best friend to Mr. Bush in the entire world. And Mr. Harper has tried to kind of keep his positions about the United States a little bit quiet, but he would take us much, much closer into the U.S. sphere of influence and control. And if we're going to keep our sovereignty as a nation, we have to stand on our own 2 feet. And that's one of the big, big concerns I have with a Harper government.
Now, let's talk some more about Quebec. You've been campaigning there, and I want to know first what you say to the Federalist voters there, of which there are many, and also what you say to the people who are more inclined towards Quebec separatism, because, of course, that's also a popular movement within Quebec, and they have their own position. How do you address both of those constituencies?
Well, first of all, about the idea of separation and breaking the country up, I point out, and of course I pointed out in my book, that it's only been through an alliance of English-speaking Canadians, French-speaking Canadians, and Aboriginal Canadians that we've been able to keep our country together. And if any part of it splits apart, if Quebec splits apart or any other part, it's going to, I think, inevitably lead to the assimilation of all the parts into the United States, including Quebec. They will become a sort of a Puerto Rico of the North. Puerto Rico, as you know, is not a state and it's not a country, but it's foreign affairs, its currency, everything controlled from the United States. That would be what would happen if Canada breaks up. So those people who are dreaming of more independence for Quebec, the safest place is inside a country, the country of Canada, which protects the French language, and under the framework that we have, the French language has flourished, and so has the French culture and French-speaking culture, the Quebec history and culture. So that's what I say there. And the idea of Federalists, now I'm pointing out that Mr. Harper has taken a position about dismantling the Canadian state, and I quoted his statement, 1, 2, or 10 governments. So that really is not my vision of Canada at all. That's Mr. Duceppe's vision of the country. And so I think that it's very dangerous on all those fronts. And on the Aboriginal side, this is another part that hasn't gotten much attention. Aboriginal people are a key component of Canadian society and Canadian history, and without their involvement in the defense of the country, we wouldn't have a country today. They played a key role in the War of 1812 and when the Americans invaded in 1775 as well. But what's the position of Mr. Harper and his people about Aboriginal issues? The key advisor to Mr. Harper is a man named Thomas Flanagan, who came to Canada from the United States and has made his career here attacking Aboriginal rights. He's written a book called First Nations, Second Thoughts, which is an all-out attack on the very idea of treaty rights. And the alliance position under Mr. Harper was to call for the privatization of the reserve systems in Canada and the assimilation of Aboriginal people. Without the reserves as a base in Canada, if they're privatized, the Aboriginal cultures and languages will simply be absorbed into the mainstream. So Aboriginal people across the country are extremely worried about Mr. Harper, and Native leaders have, one after the other, asked Canadians not to vote for Mr. Harper.
Next, I want to ask you about an issue that people in Toronto generally know almost nothing about, and that's agricultural policy. You have a strong background in this area. Can you say anything about the implications for that area in this election?
Yes, I certainly can. I'm the fourth generation on our farm in Saskatchewan. You know, we just celebrated the 100th anniversary of our farm last year in Saskatchewan, and agriculture, of course, is a big issue all over Canada. But I think the election of a Harper government, this new Conservative Party, so-called, would be a disaster for farmers. The Mr. Harper and the people around him stated over and over again that they would get rid of the powers of the Canadian Wheat Board if they were elected. Now, the Canadian Wheat Board in Western Canada is one of the last bulwarks of defense left for farmers. Most of our institutions and those programs that gave some protection to farmers have all been stripped away under the free trade agreements and to some extent under the WTO as well. And now the Wheat Board, which is the largest marketer of wheat and barley in the world, the most prestigious marketing board in the world, and the largest net earner of foreign currency for Canada, although it's largely unknown in urban Canada. But that institution has played a major role in protecting the farmers on a number of fronts. In fact, we would probably have had the release of Monsanto's genetically modified wheat in Canada had it not been for the opposition by the Canadian Wheat Board, who pointed out publicly that some 30 of our customers around the world would not buy any wheat from Canada if we released a genetically modified wheat. And so Monsanto's been forced to back off that. But the Canadian Alliance and they now call themselves this New Conservative Party, would dismantle the Wheat Board. In fact, Mr. Harper admitted that in the debate on television the other night. And that's, of course, been their position all the way along. So without that, the Western Canadian grain trade, the grain industry, would move almost overnight into American hands, same way as the energy industry and the other industries that we've seen go into American control.
My last question, how are things looking in your home riding in Saskatchewan? What are your neighbors saying, and what's your prediction for how things are going to go down? Saskatchewan is historically one of the furthest left provinces in the country, I believe.
Well, Saskatchewan is a little bit like some other parts of the country. Right now, we have 14 seats in Saskatchewan. 13 are held by this Canadian Alliance Conservatives, calling themselves Conservatives. That's another thing that really bothers me. They stole the name from the Progressive Conservative Party. They stole our colors, and they stole the reputation as a moderate party, and they're going across the country calling themselves Tories. Sometimes they're even calling themselves Progressive Conservatives when they've cut the word progressive out. And of course, the individuals who were progressives in that party, whether it's John Herron or Scott Bryson or Andre Bichon or Joe Clark or David Orchard or Flora McDonald, we've all been cut out of the picture. So these people, in my view, are imposters when they're calling themselves by that name. But be that as it may, they hold 13 of the seats of Saskatchewan's 14 seats, not because they got a majority of the votes, but because the votes are split three ways. And so many times the Conservatives are winning with simply 35 or 34% of the vote. In fact, the riding just next to mine, the Conservative won last time with less than 30% of the vote because there were four strong contenders there. So it paints the province blue, but the majority of people in Saskatchewan have voted against the Conservative Party. And, of course, you see that in many other ridings in British Columbia and other ridings across the country. So there's a real problem with our voting system. We have to move to proportional representation so that if a party gets 34% of the vote, they should end up with 34% of the seats, not 13 out of the 14 in the province of Saskatchewan. So it's that split vote between the Liberals and the NDP that's electing all kinds of Conservatives in my province, and I suspect it'll happen again in my home riding. Of course, that's what happened. And the Conservative who got in is one who is to the far right. He constantly wants to get rid of the Canadian Wheat Board. He's the one that called Belinda Stronach a prostitute for crossing over to the Liberals, and he got away with that remark. He calls himself a preacher of some kind, but he's been able to stay in as a result of this split vote between the more progressive side of the political spectrum. I'm hoping, against hope, that one thing that can come out, I'm hoping it's a minority parliament, that there will be a push out of this to move to a more democratic way of electing our people in this country.
I've got to ask then, are you supporting a strategic voting strategy?
Well, I think that it's important for people to vote, especially in Western Canada, for the candidate that's most likely to defeat the Conservative there. On a national basis, I believe it's only the Liberal Party that can hold the country together. On the ground in Quebec, they are the party that has fought successfully to hold the country together, whether it was under Mr. Trudeau in 1980 or Mr. Chrétien. I think that we have to recognize that, and that's why I'm supporting the Liberal Party. In fact, I've joined the Liberal Party, and I'm urging people who have supported me in the past to follow me in that direction so that the Liberal Party can be strengthened in terms of holding the country together.
Thank you very much for your contribution to our discussion, which is raging on our airwaves,
I must say. You're welcome, and people can get in touch with me. It's through my website. This is davidorchard.com. We've got Mr. Harper's writings up on there so people can read them for themselves. And the article, I've just written an article that's gone out to the press today about my position on the election. It'll be on the website as well. Or people can telephone me, and we have a toll-free number. It's 1-877-WE-STAND, as in We Stand on Guard for Thee. And I encourage people to take a look at the website and to get in touch with me and talk about how we can carry on the battle to keep Canada a sovereign and an independent country, and to keep our country intact.